Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Be Customer Led. I bring you not one guest today, but two guests. And they're super, super important people in the EX and the leadership space. Let me tell you, Angela Howard and Anthony Vaughn are doing some incredible stuff over on the employee side. If you're not checking the content out that these folks are doing, we're going to talk a little bit about that. Then you have to, like, do not walk. You got to run and start following them. So at the end of the show, we'll make sure that they share those details and where you can all find them. So Angela is the founder and the organizational cultural strategist for Angela R. Howard Consulting, which you've been doing for over 6 years now. And you're out in Chicago. And Anthony is doing his own thing, too. And he's got his own podcast, Project 2020, and he heads up, and he's a co-founder of the E1B2 Collective, which I want to get into a little bit, too. So welcome, Angela. Welcome, Anthony. I appreciate you guys being on the show.
Thank you. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Bill. Thank you.
All right. So, Angela, I'm really curious, what got you into the work that you're doing today and working with companies and being a strategist on this side, which is a pretty cool role. I'm actually fascinated by the role.
Yeah, so I'll keep a long story short because it's been a long journey. My background's in organizational psychology. So really around building systems within organizations that create better, happier, more productive. That's what my educational background. But my mission and my passion is around building better leaders, which in turn build better communities, societies, mm-hmm. and communities. So I have a huge passion around working with organizations because I honestly feel like organizations have a responsibility to produce happier humans who then go out to society and into communities. Or, you know, they also have the impact and the influence to create sick, unhealthy, unfulfilled human beings. And that impacts all of us. So that's really the basis of the work that I do.
I love that. Oh my gosh. I always say, think about training, what's going to make you a better person? Don't worry about being a better employee. Like, what's going to make you a better person? We'll reap the benefits after that as an organization, right? Anthony, let's go to you really quickly. So tell us what is your journey and what got you to where you are today?
I'm going to follow Angela's lead and keep it really tight because I tend to go long-winded. So I started a couple brands really early. I'm kind of that oddball where I decided to drop out of university and start a company at 19. And so when you do that, you don't typically learn a lot of leadership skills right off the bat because I really didn't have any. I think my only job was at a Wawa gas station maybe. So didn't really have anyone that really taught me those things. And so started a company in 19, another one at 21. The first one, though, was the biggest company financially and staff-wise, but I lost that company due to just a lack of understanding of all the things that we talk about and that mm-hmm. we do now. And that just got me on the path, started studying behind the scenes a lot, and inevitably, long story short, became a head of people about 5 years ago, was furloughed due to COVID here, and I decided to try to jump into the entrepreneurial world again. Mm-hmm. Just in this medium and just talking about these things. So,
so cool. Yeah. That's an inspirational story from both of you. Angela, first question I want to just put to you, COVID, one of the silver linings of COVID, frankly, is that there's just been a reemergence of the focus on employees, right? And not just from the focus from the perspective of let's make the work life and work balance better, but how do we actually help enrich our people's lives, right? So they become, to your point, right, that home life, whatever that is, everything kind of just becomes better and elevates. Why did it take a global pandemic to do that? Why couldn't we have figured that out before? I'm curious to hear your perspective.
That's a great question. Why in the world did it take so long? Because we knew about this a decade. I mean, we've known this all along, I should say. Folks who have been in this work have known that if you create a more holistic human experience for people, they're going to be happier, healthier, they're going to produce more. But for some reason, we continued with traditional management, chain and command type of workplace. And so that's how everything around the workplace processes, how we work with people, everything, the whole system has been created to facilitate something mm-hmm. that hasn't been healthy for people. It hasn't allowed for work-life balance or work-life integration.
Yeah.
So I think, honestly, what's taken so long is that people have been thrusted into this dire crisis state that has proven that, one, people can work from home. Yep. It's possible. And actually, people are getting a lot more done.
Yep.
So, wow, okay, people can work from home. They can also be happier because they're spending more time with their family and their kids, and they're able to do other things that fulfill them, and they're bringing that energy back to work. So, honestly, I think it's been out of complete crisis, and companies have been thrusted into this. And, oh, by the way, those of you who haven't been doing this well at all haven't survived, or are getting a lot of visibility that they don't want to get in the media
right. from yeah. any
perspective. So they have to now pay attention. So I know that's not the best answer. I wish I had a different
answer. No, I think it's the right answer, Angela. I actually took a survey where I work recently, just this week, because we're formulating our plan for what is a post-COVID, if you can even call it that, kind of environment look like. And they said, what has been the best thing about working from home? And I literally wrote, I was like, being able to have breakfast, lunch, and dinner with my kids. And like the energy that gives me every day, and like the renewness every, you know, couple of hours, it's been like, that to me is like what I'm taking away from this whole thing. I'm like, I'm never going back to that. Like, why would I give that up? Like, why would you make me give that up too, right?
And I'm sorry, I just wanted to add, that's a great point, is it's not so much the ability to work from home. It's about choice.
Yeah.
So that's what my own research is what I, in my, this head of mine, what I'm figuring out is, it's not about working from home. So the companies who are saying, oh, everybody can work from home forever, that's not the point. The point is that you have the choice to sit down and have breakfast, lunch, and dinner with your kids. You've chosen that. Somebody else might be more energized by actually being in the office.
Yeah.
But let's give people the choice. Let's let them be adults and have some discretion.
Yeah, Salesforce actually just came out with they have like three things. If your role can be remote, you can be 100% remote. If you have to be in the office sometimes for certain things, you have to be in the office just for these things. Or if you have to be in the office 5 days a week, you got to come in 5 days a week because that's what your role is, right? I think, and they're giving people that choice, which I think you nailed it 100%. Like, that is the critical piece. Anthony, I've got a question for you. Last year we saw an incredible amount, an incredible movement kind of rise up around Black Lives Matter. You had an enormous, an enormous focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion in corporate America too. Two conversations, frankly, that I hope it is more than just dialogue. I hope more companies are taking real action, right? And individuals in their homes are taking real action too. I'm curious, just like your perspective on there, like how do you think that is changing and evolving corporate culture and leadership overall?
An interesting one. I have this initiative within my collective called Monday Anticipation, which is pretty much centered around shifting the employer-employee relationship and dynamic. Mm-hmm. And a big piece of that is like really forcing employees and motivating them, like putting a battery in their back to be super intentional, to be super clear about what they want and what they expect, and like setting non-negotiables. And so for me, I've been doing a lot of research around this. I think a non-negotiable moving forward for the employee base is going to be, we need to see a lot of diversity within the organization. Mm-hmm. We need to see a DE&I execution that is not just a one-off workshop, that it's not just a one-off conversation, mm-hmm. but it's really tangibly built into the operating model of the company that is day in and day out, and that is proven. and the relationships I have with my managers and the relationships I have with my coworkers, you can see it kind of embedded in the organization. Mm-hmm. That's where I think this is going to start going. I think employees, you know, it used to be certain types of other benefits that would say that, that an employee would have as kind of their non-negotiable kind of benefit package. I think now this is going to be one of those standards. Like, if we don't see tangible process in place, mm-hmm. that building these things and showing these things to be true, then I think companies going to struggle to hire the best talent, frankly.
I agree. I mean, you know, everybody talks about, like, you know, in my previous employer, we talked about having a diverse slate of candidates. I'm just like, okay, that's good. But to your point, the operating model is like, let's also have a diverse slate of individuals who are interviewing these individuals too, right? Like, you just can't say, hey, we're going to have a diverse slate, and then it's like six old white people like interviewing, because, like, what does that do to the candidate in the seat, right? If they're, you know, a minority group or underrepresented, like what is happening in this world? But I'm with you. I love baking that in. What examples, like, what do you, like, what's your wish? Like, one or two examples, like, you hope that maybe companies start doing?
I think, and actually, let me do this too, because what I like to do in moments where I feel like I have a macro opinion, and at times where I feel like there are others that can really dive into the, mm-hmm. the details of it, because I'll be frank, I have a very interesting background of how I grew up, and a lot of this work within the world of work has been, I don't want to say new to me applying, but from a very operational level, there are certain things that I, even me, like being in this work, I haven't done. But I know Angela, though, this is something that is very important to her. So if I can, just to bring value even to the content here, I'll swing it to her.
All right, go for it. Things that's why we got three people on the show today.
I like to stay in the sweet spot of what everyone does well. And so I have some thoughts, but I think she can layer a little bit more context and depth into it.
Well, let's do it. Let's switch over to Angela. Angela, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so diversity isn't enough. It's table stakes. So and just from a business perspective, right? Like, why wouldn't you want your workforce to reflect your customer or reflect the people you're serving, or to reflect your consumers? We are a diverse country. You know, we have lots of different types of people who live in the U.S. So it's detrimental to not have a diverse workforce. So if you don't, that's table stakes. Mm-hmm. You got to figure out a way to change that. So back to your question, Bill, about what are a few things that we can do. It's systemic and systematic. When I say systemic, what we're really talking about is you're really dismantling processes, programs, and digging really, really deep to the root to question and challenge those things. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we are very entrenched in the word culture fit. And culture fit has gotten us in this mess. So I like to say we need culture amplifiers. Mm-hmm. So and we need to challenge people when they start to say, oh, well, they're not going to be a because are you trying to enhance your culture and bring it to another place? Or are you trying to duplicate what you currently have? Mm-hmm. So that's one thing, is changing your whole mindset on culture fit and thinking about who can amplify our culture. The second thing would be you can't hire diverse talent if the environment they're entering is going to reject them. Mm-hmm. So you can hire all the diverse talent you want, but you get them in the door, they don't feel like they belong, they don't feel like they have a place, they're not invited to the after work happy hours, yeah, or golf or the bar after work, and they leave. True inclusion. So you need that inclusion as well to be intact before you start hiring in diverse talent.
I'm gonna add one more thing. Because that's the way my brain works, is I get kind of energized once I start hearing more context. One thing that I did for a dear friend who you probably should, Galen Emanuel is the guy that I think you should give a plug to, but I did some work for him on the DE&I space. And just to add on what she's saying, everything Angela's talking about there at a very operational level and all the ideas, all the perspectives, allow that to be something that is a standard, and the DE&I executive that you're bringing in, don't have them just sitting there doing a workshop or doing a talk or even presenting ideas and then you pushing those things down as executives. give that person the inevitable decision-making right, and the buck ends with them, obviously outside of a CEO. I'm a big fan of that. And Angela and I, we collided and really appreciated the same type of perspective around, you know, what the head of people kind of decision-making structure should look like, and how the buck should really stop with them, and how it should be stretched across an organization. With this DE&I work, if you're bringing someone in that really knows these things, very similar to the way Angela does and so many others, really look to them as not only a true advisor, but the inevitable decision maker. Don't challenge, don't push against, don't question too often. They have the best intention of the employees and the brand at heart. And I'm seeing too many companies from afar just talking and having conversations. There's too much kind of bucking against what they're thinking and what their perspectives are. And I just don't understand that. You brought them in for a reason. So appreciate that reason and stand by that reason.
I love, the buck stop should always stop with the CEO, right? I mean, at the end of the day, if he or she is not walking that talk, right? So we could probably end the show right there. And like, that was awesome. Angela, you talk a little bit about not blowing up HR, but really rethinking it, right? And I know that the two of you are collaborating on and helping organizations set up like a chief people officer kind of office and helping them grow and nurture that. Angela, what's wrong with HR that it needs to change?
So many things. I love my HR colleagues. I am in HR, so I guess I can be tough on us. Traditional HR was developed to structure segmented parts of the employee experience. It started off with things like, okay, we have people, now we have employment laws that that employers weren't able to understand, so they needed someone to translate those laws. And then it turned into, well, we got to pay people, right? So we need experts around. So very basic traditional HR practices. What's happened is we've replaced a lot of those systems with people and AI. Technology has progressed the way we structure, the way we engineer HR processes. And so we have a grand opportunity to think about the employee experience as not programs, but a connected experience, almost like the customer experience, right? Understanding the journey of an employee. Mm-hmm. Of course, the basic stuff will always be there. You always have to pay people. You got to onboard them. You know, you got to do all these other things. But HR has an opportunity to be a strategic business partner to the CEO, to the executive team, to the leadership team, and really be a right-hand man or woman to people operations as a whole. I'd say what's wrong with HR today? We tend to live in the world of jargon and concepts. We tend to also separate ourselves from the business, and we don't learn about the business. We don't learn about how business works and how it's connected, how people and business are connected, obviously. And then I would just say the last thing is we like to keep our jobs. and I say that.
Who doesn't, though? That's kind of a crazy comment. With all due respect.
I know.
I respect what you're doing. Okay.
Hear me
out. I'll shut up.
We hold on to things. I can't tell you how many times I've worked with other HR professionals who, you know, just arbitrarily will not let go of a process like coaching or even terminating an employee. You know, I feel like the person terminating an employee should be the person who works with that person day in and day out. There should be some empathy.
Yeah.
Of course, there's some legalities behind it. You need that HR person with you, but the HR person and the business partners should be collectively having that conversation. So I think we hold on to things when we don't need to. And we have this grand opportunity to be strategic and actually work with the business to connect the people operations to it.
I love that. I don't know, Anthony, do you want to add to that? Because
I think the only thing that I want to add to it is when she was touching on understanding the holistic business, I mean, this is something, you know, this is something I have to see from more HR leaders. Being as someone that kind of came from this, from another world and kind of jumped in. When I say another world, I came from starting businesses. I came from branding, marketing, operations. You know, I came from different departments running different things myself. And so when I jumped in here, when I got my first head of people opportunity, the first, honestly, I'll be very frank, the reason why the company even gave me a shot is because they knew they didn't have to go through the process of teaching or educating me around all the functions of the business. Those things were, I already knew those things. And so as I build more relationships with, you know, other heads of people or CROs or HR directors, they just frankly don't understand those elements. And so I'm always a big fan of, hey, start a side hustle on the side, like really understand what it feels like. And Angela and I can, you know, we both can tell you, like, there's a lot different being internal and then externally trying to build and do certain things and figure out the different elements of a business. Or if you don't want to do that, find other mentorship opportunities outside of your own organization and shadow, like be a little bit humble. Go to a local marketing guy or gal that you know that runs that department and just have an opportunity to understand what those elements are. I want to see more of that, because if you have that, you'll have that seat at the table. You'll have that influence. You'll have that respect. And then you'll be able to kind of throw your weight around a little bit better than you typically would.
I love that. So so let's talk about the chief people officer role a little bit. Like, that's not a lot of people are doing that, right? It's still relatively new. I equate that a little bit to like the chief customer officer. You're seeing a lot that come to the fore a lot. How are you guys working with companies? Because you guys are taking a pretty unique approach, which I think is really cool. How are you guys working with companies, and what should the, when you're going to counsel those companies, like, you tell them, like, here's what you should be looking for. So I don't know if we can go, we'll go to Angela and then, you know, Anthony, if you want to jump in as well.
Yeah, your chief people officer should, in so many words, be looking to work themselves out of a job. They should be building infrastructure, leadership capability, and this person should really be sitting at the executive table, advising around people and how that connects people and behavior in the workplace. And how that connects in with the business and the operations of the business. And when I say work themselves out of a job, it's kind of a meta concept.
Yeah, I get
it. But, you know, basically saying, you know, you should be building a leadership team so strong that you don't even need an HR person. Like, that's the idea around, that's the type of person you need. Someone who can not only build process programs and be a coach to the executive team and leadership, but someone who can teach and coach and build a strong community of leaders who is then going to manifest the culture that you want within the organization. So that's kind of a unicorn is what I'm saying.
I call them purple squirrels, right? There's no such thing. I don't know. I'd love to find that person too. Go ahead, Anthony.
You saw me smiling and freaking out, because this is the thing I love most about Angela. Like, when I first heard that, because that's a real thing, right? Like, What the difference is, and I want the listeners to really understand, and she can even expand on it more, and then I'll kind of tell you more about like what we're doing as a business. But what she's talking about is genuinely stretching every capability you think your head of people should be doing across the organization, and having managers, executives, everyone in between taking ownership of that as well, and taking some of that off of their plate, literally, right? Like, it's not even a figurative statement, like, it's a literal statement. And so whether it's internal communications, whether it's leadership development, whether it's, you know, developing an individual contributor, like, there are things along the process of what a typical head of people would do that someone else inside of the organization that is not a head of people should take a bit of ownership on and have a certain piece of that. Even in the recruiting space. I mean, anything that you think your head of people should be doing, there are other executives and managers within the organization that can take a piece of that. Our point of view that we both agree with, they should be a coach. You know, I'm a football guy. You know, I grew up playing football. And this is where I really came in. And I've told this to Angela, and this is a vulnerable aspect of me. I kind of cut the line. And so I'm kind of like going backwards, trying to figure things out. Like, I'm not really an HR guy, right? I kind of jumped to the strategic aspects. I'm a strategist. I'm a thinker. I'm a coach. I'll put you in the best place. If anyone knows anything about any great coach, they're not the best defensive coordinator. They're not the best offensive coordinator. They're not the best at special teams. They're not the best quarterback coach. A quarterback coach is a great quarterback coach. A lineman coach is a great lineman coach. And too many organizations are having these HR individuals getting very drilled down and gridded one thing. No, they should be a coach putting everyone in place, should have a great team around you. And so I guess I'll pair that over to like kind of what we're doing as a business, right? Like,
yeah.
The premise of it is really simple. We want to educate, frankly, the smaller businesses, the startup community around what that head of people, and frankly, not even just the head of people, what strategic employee experience and strategic people operations actually should look like. They should not just be doing payroll. Mm-hmm. They should not just be doing recruiting. They should not just be doing, you know, HR law and compliance. You know, they should really be getting in there doing a lot of these strategic initiatives. And again, very similar to what I said with the DE&I initiative, they should be at the table. The buck to certain aspects should stop with them. You brought them in for a reason. Respect them, understand that, and put them in a place to win. And so, you know, at an ad hoc level right now, we just want to help startup companies do that. We want to jump in. We really want to learn with them. We want to build with them. And we want to educate them, because in the beginning process, these founders and these managers are not doing these things. They're listening to, you know, executives that are, let's call it what it is, 50, 60, 70 years old, right, from VC or startup advisors. Yeah. And their perspective of HR and what they're giving to these founders, very different than what, the world that me and Angela come from. And so we want to educate them on what that role should be and how that really shows up operationally.
I love that. You guys should work. I hope you are working with private equity companies, because you could scale up this model across a portfolio. If you're not already doing that, please start doing that ASAP. You'll have maximum benefit at that point. All right. I want to get a little bit to some of the stuff that you guys are doing individually, because it's really cool. Now I'm going to confess, Anthony, that I have not. Now, you got two podcasts going right now. You've got Project 2030 and you've got E1B2, the podcast. I have not listened to them, just being open and honest and transparent, because I've been listening to Angela's, which is like, and I've said this publicly because it's the truth, it's my new favorite podcast. I will get to your podcast as well, I promise. But tell me, like, what are you trying to achieve through these platforms, right? And like, you know, and you mentioned the E1B2 collective as well. Like, what are you trying to achieve? But then also, what are you learning from them?
Well, you just nailed the head on the, let's go with the, you know, learning, right? That's really the punchline there. When I failed and ended my first company and lost everything, frankly, I told myself, I will remove ego as much as I can, and I will be a learner first. And so Angela would tell you, I'm all in the horn. Hey, Angela, can I shadow you? Hey, what are your thoughts around this? I need to learn. And so everyone on the podcast, number one, I'm learning from, whether it's VCs, whether it's startup advisors, whether it's internal heads of people, whether it's anyone, right? Whether it's all of my partners within the company, I need to learn from you guys. So that's just my passion. That's what I need to do. That's just proven to be a good model. Beyond that, though, with the podcast, my goal is really to build relationships and build that context. From a business perspective, I just don't think you can win any other way than having really deep relationships. And what better way than to build a little bit of trust and compatibility on an hour conversation? And then for the listeners, I just want to change the industry and the perspective of what strategic employee experience looks like. When I do a lot of my, because I have a lot of like solo episodes that go for like 6 to 20 minutes. When I do those, I jump right in and talk about the merging and the synergies and the marriage between pure business and employee experience. And I just want to bring that more to the table. There's a lot of podcasts that talk just about people operations or just about employee experience. What I'm hoping the listeners will get is, if it's a founder listening, I'm one of you. I'm starting a company now. I started two. I know the struggles. I see exactly what you're going through. Let me talk to you from where you are. And so that's the goal for me. And hopefully I'm doing a decent job, but Angela's is way better than mine, so don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
So that's awesome. I love that. Angela, you started a podcast, and I really do mean, like folks, I will I've got this long list of stuff that I got to listen to, but you know, you're in you do this work every day. Like, you want to go listen to what other people are doing naturally. So you've got a great podcast, Humanly Possible. You know, what are you learning from it? Like, what are you getting out of the podcast? Or why did you even start it? Let's even go there first.
Yeah. So, I actually started it because I'd had conversations like this, and I'm like, I should have recorded that. You know, it, just the flow, the natural flow of conversation in this space. And what I noticed was it wasn't just HR people who cared about human-centric workplaces or human-centric making work more human. I found that it was actually a mix of creators, entrepreneurs, innovators, people who are at the cutting edge of what that actually means. And the reason why I started it was because of COVID. It was kind of born out of this emergence of people are paying attention. And I've been talking about it for a long time, but now I'm actually getting ears and interest. So that's why I started it. And because I wanted to provide real tactical, poignant examples and case studies mm-hmm. about how you actually create a more human workplace, regardless of where you are in your growth journey in business.
And you do get that off of the podcast too. So for listeners, you got to check it out. You know, for me, it's funny. I was actually recording a show before this, and someone said, well, they asked me that question. So I was like, man, that's a good question. I started asking that. And I said, this reinforces the notion that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
Right. Because there are people, to your point, are just doing amazing things out there that you're constantly learning from. It's a great learning and growth hack, right? And for an investment of time, an hour a week or 2 hours a week, whatever it is, like, you come out on the other side, like every week, and I'm like teeming with like ideas, much like I will be after this show too with you guys. We've been talking a little bit about something, and then I'm seeing a lot more in the space, around employee experience. There, the term employee engagement and employee experience are really starting to, people are talking about them like they're the same thing. Right. Yeah. So, And Anthony, we'll go to you first, but like, what is your perspective there? Because I feel like, for me at least, like, engagement is the output, like the experience is the journey to get to engagement, right? Like, how do you see that, and how do you think about that and discuss it with the companies you guys are working with?
Well, what you just said is the definition from my point of view, so I won't even touch on that. Like, yeah. that difference you just labeled from my POV, and Angela, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm always learning. I think that's a difference, right? But even beyond that, for me, and I know it's kind of cheesy, and I don't even know if I even mentioned it here, like the E1B2 stands for employees first, right? And so for me, when I think about employee experience or I think about employee engagement, I'm putting the employee first at a very mm-hmm. tactical, operational level. So when I'm thinking about anything to do with like my internal communication strategy, or even when I'm thinking about any new products we have coming out, I'm going down to the employees that are on the ground floor. They're in the stores. They're talking to the customers. They know what's best. I'm going to them first. I need them to be heard. I need them to be recognized. I need to understand where they're coming from. When it comes to pay structures, when it comes to, you know, anything we're doing, again, at a macro level from an internal communications perspective, I want to know what's going to make them psychologically safe. I want to know their context. Mm-hmm. I could give you some examples, but again, as I'm learning, I'm a little out there. I go all the way employees first, because here's what I want to do. And here's a point that's connected to employee experience and engagement. I want to exhaust every excuse for the employee to feel like the organization is not supporting them. I will, and Angela has seen this probably firsthand with me, I will raise my hand every time and say, nope, that was me, that was me, that was me, that was me. And I want to help, and I did this morning actually, I want to help companies look at that system and look at that mm-hmm. process. So it's like, hey, are you feeling psychologically safe? Have we given you all the information you need to know? Have we understood your context enough? Go through a big checklist, and I help companies create that of like everything you need to do to raise your hand as an organization and take the blame. Mm-hmm. And then after you've exhausted all of those, then you look to the employee and say, hey, here's the accountability that I need. Because we've exhausted every option to try to really understand. For me, that's what it comes to, like, into really engaging with the employee, because that creates a real experience for them that is beneficial. And then, of course, there's a lot of elements to employee experience, but I'll let Angela maybe get into certain detailed aspects of that.
Yeah. So as a cultural strategist, you know, Angela, I'm sure you've got a view here too. I don't know if my definition is right. I know, Anthony, I appreciate you agreeing with me, but I think we're going to learn here together. So
yes, we will. So I actually see it a little bit differently. I find it odd that we, like when we say the customer experience, when we talk about the customer experience, we're always talking about how can we as a company shape this experience so it matches the customer's needs, right? But when we talk about the employee experience, we're kind of talking about this like nebulous work human. Like we all come to work and we're an employee now, right? Like we just put on the, we put on the new face and now we're an employee. So in a way, I like to think of it as human experience at work. How do you understand how humans operate in our natural habitats generally? And then how do you create a work experience that matches and meshes and ebbs and flows with that? So for example, you know, we humans do like routine and structure. They like things to be clear. Our brains like clarity. So, you know, let's make sure that we have a process for creating clarity and leaders have the tools to create clarity. Humans also are social animals. We're social beings. So why not have workspaces that are designed for collaboration versus closed offices? You know, it's things like that. So for me, it's more about human experience at work. And employee engagement is just one measurement. There's also other measurements such as, you know, you can even go into like biometrics and well-being metrics that say that this human is a better human because of what you've designed and what you've created.
So, by the way, if you have not trademarked human experience at work yet, please, after the show, go do that. Spend whatever the $200 is at the trademark office to go do that. I love that. So you heard it here, folks.
Heard it first.
No, that's right. I'm loving this conversation. All right. So I got to know what's on the horizon for the two of you. You guys are starting to collaborate. Any interesting projects or things that you guys want to highlight that you guys are really excited about?
Yeah, actually, I'm just thinking there's a lot of projects in the air.
You do like four things right now. If you go to your LinkedIn profile, Anthony, it's like present, like some year, 2 years ago to like, I'm like, how are you doing all this? Like, I don't.
Well, I'll tell you how I do it. Number one, I have a lot of great people around me that support me on these things. So it's not just me.
That's huge.
Things. I figure I throw 50 balls in the air and 20 of them go away. You know, it's the entrepreneur in me, right? I think one thing that I do want to mention and talk about is just two things. I want to like drill down again, just like on the employee first and really extracting where your employees stand mentally, their perspectives of the organization and genuinely what they need. I just can't drill down enough into that enough. But on my projects, I think one thing that is starting to pick up an interesting bit of steam is the work I'm doing with Beyond Brand, and maybe I'll give it a tiny little plug. I think companies do a horrible job, and yeah, I made that big statement, I genuinely think horrible, job of explaining to an incoming applicant of what they're actually getting into. So they call that employer branding. I think there's a lot of fluffy and beautiful creative that's floating around there, and great podcasts and videos and beautiful websites. So I have an initiative where we get down to like the operations. We get down into the actual workflows. We get down to the leadership personalities. We get down into the work that you're gonna be doing day to day. And we'll record that. And we'll have leaders that you will be led by really unpack the reality of what's happening today. Not what happened 2 years ago, not what happened 6 months ago when you had a video crew come in and do this beautiful video. What's the leader like today? The good, bad, and the ugly, right? And so we get all that out, record it, put in the ATS, and it gets spit to an applicant coming in. Mm-hmm. And what that applicant gets to do is they get to like actually decide not to go to the interview, which, let me save you guys the time, that's a really good thing. You don't want 50 people showing up for one role. You want 8. You want 6. You really want to dive down into who's going to be the best fit. And if they know enough about things, the interview is going to be beautiful and it's going to save you time. It's going to save you money. So that's one project that is kind of interesting that I'm excited about.
That's very cool. And you're doing that through E1B2 Collective right now?
Yeah, I am.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. I love that level of transparency. That would be awesome. And by the way, maybe even tell them how much money that you're going to pay them so you don't have to ask them how much you make and pay them less than what they're worth, too. That's a whole other episode to talk about that stuff. Angela, anything on your end? You got a lot going on, too, I know. But like, what are you really excited about? Anything coming out on the horizon?
Yeah, so I am working with a group of industrial organizational psychologists. We're working on a what we call actively disrupting exclusivity diagnostic. It is a organizational audit and employee survey around DE&I. So what we've found is
cool.
Organizations usually don't know where to start with this work. I know we talked about it earlier. So this is really meant to be an evaluation tool that kind of spits out recommendations for organizations to actually look at the systemic and the systematic gaps that are creating exclusivity throughout the employee lifecycle, and then giving some tools and some consulting supplements to help them actually tackle those things in a meaningful way. So stepping away from the typical like you need unconscious bias training just hire more, people of color. This is really a very poignant, direct tool that tells you where you can make progress over time. One of my projects that I'm really excited about.
When do you think you're going to be launching that?
It's ready to go.
Cool.
The only thing we're waiting on is a white label tool, a technology. But until then, we're just using just a Survey Monkey type of to collect the data, but we're going to get fancier and more automated as we go.
Very cool. Love it. All right. You guys probably want to get on with your weekend. You're both very busy people. I always ask this question, and frankly, it's the one question outside of people's journeys. It's those two questions people love hearing about the most. I always get the most comments. So Anthony, where do you go for inspiration?
I go to my partners. I had to pause there because I go a couple of different places, but I genuinely do go to my partners. And Angela, I hope Angela knows that I'm not just saying that to be cheesy. Like, I go to Angela for a lot of advice. I go to Claire. I go to Keith. Talk to Anna pretty often. I my mom too, so those are the characters, right? And then there's a couple of the partners as well that I left out. I apologize, but I genuinely go to the people that I like purposely surrounded around me.
Mm-hmm.
They know me well. They know how I think. They inspire me and challenge me to go to push a little harder or to redirect my strategy. So yeah, I would say that.
That's awesome. I love you. Put your mom in that. That's so important. I go to my mom for inspiration all the time. Angela, where do you go for your inspiration?
I'm also going to be cheesy. I love this question. I go to my husband. My husband and I, AJ knows, Anthony knows this well. We're two very different people, like very different. We're alike in a lot of ways, but he is the most honest, instinctual person I know. So he is able to kind of see through the chaos. And again, his background and his perspective is so different than mine. And so anytime I'm stuck, anytime I need to see things in a new light or with new inspiration. I'll say a less cheesy answer. Clubhouse. If you all are not on Clubhouse, they should pay me for this, but it's a new app where you kind of talk through in real time scenarios and topics. And that's been a source of inspiration for me because it's been so instant. It's like this, right? Having good conversations and getting great insights from people you don't even know, which is awesome.
So I'm not sure I realized. So now I got to go find you and follow you on Clubhouse. I love Clubhouse, but I'm still trying to figure the one thing I don't like, everyone on there is like 10x your business on Instagram and make go $5 million. In three weekends, there's so much of that happening. That's kind of, it's turned me off a little bit. But I do think it's a really neat platform. One, it's like instant feedback. It's a bigger, it could be a bigger audience and a deeper conversation the way that they've created the platform. So I do love it for that. Angela, Anthony, thank you so much for being on the show. This is a fantastic conversation. I've learned a ton. And where can people find you? Angela, we'll go to you first. If they want to get in touch, where can they find you and everything you're doing?
Yeah, so you mentioned the podcast, Humanly Possible, Future of Work Conversations, and then at A. Rose Howard on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, same handle for all of those, or AngelaRHoward.com.
Cool. Anthony, what about you?
We have the E1B2 Collective .com. The podcast is called the E1B2 Collective Podcast. I'm all over LinkedIn. You'll be able to find me pretty easily. Twitter at E1B210. I don't know why I couldn't pick anything other but 10. And you know what? You probably won't need to find me. Knowing me, I'll probably find you. So I'll reach out to you if I want to talk to you.
By the way, for the listeners, I totally believe that comment, by the way. You will find them for sure.
Yeah, I will.
Guys, this has been awesome. Thanks so much. I really appreciate your time and the conversation. All right, everybody. Great, great episode. That's it for us this week. We're out. Talk to you soon, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Be Customer Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at BeCustomerLed.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out.